everyone. Welcome to today's Word of Mom Radio here on the Word of Mom Media Network. I'm your host, Dori DiCarlo, and you know we are here week after week, show after show, breaking those myths that mompreneurs and businesswomen, especially those of us building our businesses from home, you know, that we're just dabbling in between bake sales and getting our nails done. We're not. We are smart, we are savvy, and we are sharing the wisdom of women in business and in life. And I am really thrilled to be bringing today's guest to the show. Alyssa Rapp, since January of 2018, has served as the CEO of Surgical Solutions, a Chicago-based healthcare company. She's also a lecturer in management at Stanford University's Graduate School of Business and an adjunct professor of entrepreneurship at the University of Chicago's Booth Business School. From 2005 to 2015, Alyssa served as the founder and CEO of Bottlenotes, Inc., the leading interactive media company in the U.S. wine, craft beer, and artisanal spirits industries. Starting in 2015, Alyssa also served as the managing partner at AJR Ventures, a strategic advisory firm. She earned her BA in political science and the history of art from Yale University in 2000 and an MBA from Stanford University's Graduate School of Business in 2005. And you know, when she's not immersed in business and civic life, she loves spending time with her husband, Hal Morris, and their two beautiful daughters. So with all of that being said, Alyssa, welcome to Word of Mom Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Dorian. What a gracious introduction.
Wow, what an amazing journey. I would love for you to share with us and tell us how it led to what you are doing today.
Sure. So you covered it a little bit in the bio. I had started off, grew up in a relatively political family who believed that government can do good things for people, which I hope is still the case. And I therefore went and got a poli-sci degree at Yale and studied art history too. And when I got out of school, I worked on what I thought was at the time the most interesting political race in the country, which was way back when in 2000, Hillary Clinton's first U.S. Senate race. And I decided that I wanted to do a couple years in politics before graduate school and got picked up in the fall after interning on Hillary's team by U.S. Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky as her national finance director. And I learned a great lesson in that experience, which was anytime someone gives you an opportunity to step into shoes that are too big for you at the time, I was way over my skis. It was a really big opportunity I got, but I grew into it and I worked my tail off and I learned a ton and I gave it all I had and really did a lot of interesting things for Congresswoman Schakowsky, including creating something that's now gone on for 19 years, believe it or not, called the Ultimate Women's Power Lunch. It was a big idea at the time and is a big political fundraising theme now today, but it was a great life experience that taught me I loved to be an entrepreneur and create things just like my grandfather had, and I talk about his influence in my life, being a Holocaust survivor who ended up being a business leader in the Netherlands and an entrepreneur in the U.S., and my stepfather, who's another Jewish elder advisor and inspiration to me, a great entrepreneur in Chicago here. And so those entrepreneurial embers were burning, and either it took them to Stanford Business School, where I tried to get all the fundamentals I thought I would need to know to start a business. And you've started a business, Dori. You know as much as I do. You don't know what you don't know. And sometimes you look back and say, God, if I knew how hard that was going to be, I'm sure I wouldn't have done it. So I'm grateful for my blind naivete at the time. But I did nonetheless have the chutzpah to start a business right out of school. It was called Bottlenotes. It was a .com in the wine space, as you mentioned, and it started as an e-commerce company and morphed into a media company due to a big regulatory change that I'll spare you the details on. But that story, that part of the journey was long. I mean, I ended up getting married and having, you know, my first daughter in that whole time frame. It was a long, windy, complex road, but I learned a ton and ultimately landed that plane and then spent a couple of years doing advisory work to some private equity firms and family offices. And when family reasons brought us back to Chicago, where my husband and I are both from, about 3+ years ago, I decided I was ready to be a CEO again and ended up changing my structure of the company I ran, which people don't always do, but I'm really grateful I had the opportunity to do. Instead of running a venture capital-backed company, I have run for the last 3 years a private equity-backed company, and that was still very entrepreneurial in some ways and less entrepreneurial in others, and good old-fashioned blocking and tackling and management. But it's been a wonderful way to learn about the U.S. healthcare system. And no sooner than we had gotten the company up and exited to a different buyer, which was always the goal within 2 years, COVID hit, and now I've been managing through the bucking bronco of COVID. So it's been no dull moment, I guess, is the answer to tell us about your journey. And it's been a privilege to get to talk to some great people like you at this point as well, because of the book I wrote, Leadership and Life Hacks. My philosophy on writing that was any school of hard knocks learning I've had that can spare others, particularly women, the same school of hard knocks, personally or professionally, I'd be honored to do so. So that's what ended up having me put it on paper.
You know, I want to go back, because having started your career in politics, mm-hmm. and especially on Hillary Clinton, I was living in New York. I actually was doing some stuff with a radio station right before she started her bid, and actually got to meet her and Libby Pataki. She was the governor's wife at the time. They were both speaking.
Right.
Morfitt, a few years later, Hillary was at the White Plains train station as she was running for Senate, just talking to people. And I was catching a train into Manhattan and got to stop to talk to her. And she was like, "We've met. I'll never forget your eyes. You have the most amazing eyes." Mm-hmm. And I was so completely blown away by her true sincerity. She gets such a bad rap, and it's such a shame, because she is somebody, when I think of the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people that this woman has met, and for her to just be like, "We've met," because she actually
awesome.
Looked me in the eye when we spoke.
Yeah, very well said.
Yeah, and so you morph to now, and here we are as mothers of daughters, and we have a woman vice president, and hopefully an administration that is going to do the will of the people and what a government is supposed to do. You know, whatever happened to for the people, by the people, of the people, you know, that whole thing that I grew up on and you grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's exciting. And it's an amazing journey that you've had, because through it all, that entrepreneurial spirit of yours has kind of spurned your journey on. And what has that been like for you to take it through not only owning your own business, but now being CEO of Surgical Solutions? How is that all tied in for you?
I agree with you about the milestones of women in leadership positions, and I am proud and honored to have been in a leadership, smaller scale perhaps, but leadership positions of my own. And I think that the piece I've learned about myself along this journey is that I do love leading teams and running companies. I am a doer. I'm a roll-up-your-sleeves operator. And the difference in entrepreneurship versus intrapreneurship is actually quite subtle. When it's entrepreneurial, you have a thesis, you have an idea, you have a radio network you want to start in your case, or a business, .com in mine the first time around. And then you have to get people to believe in that. And it's people who would be customers, people who would be team members, people who might be investors. But you're really selling a vision, and then you're executing against it. And so with the second step of my career, it was not entrepreneurial in the same way, but it's still been entrepreneurial, because I walked into a situation that was, by definition, a turnaround. It was not in the best of situations, and I was drafted for that purpose, more entrepreneurial than not. And it was about looking at someone else's assumptions about vision and what problem this company was solving in the marketplace, and checking those assumptions and retooling them a little bit, and then again executing against that strategy. And I think what I've learned about myself is that the vision or problem-solving piece up front is pretty important to me, and I love it, and I sink my teeth into it, but I don't want to just be a problem solver or a thinker, because in my heart of hearts, I'm a doer. So that's where, whether it's my idea that and amalgamating talent and capital and running at it, or someone else's idea that I come in and tweak, or some combination thereof, deep in my heart, that's what I love to do. And I don't know if I would ever just be a board member or just be an investor. And there are people I know who are wildly talented at both, because I actually like to think and do. I don't like to just do one or just do the other. I don't want to just be executing someone else's playbook. And I don't want to just be thinking in an ivory tower. I like to think and then implement, because ideation is fun. Implementation is hard. And, you know, it's hard. So the masochist in me likes the hard problem solving and the doing, and the doer in me likes the glory of winning. It's been a privilege and an incredible roller coaster ride, I can say with total transparency. Every company I've joined, it's never what you think it's going to be. It always has twists and turns you don't expect, and part of that is about grit. A big piece of what I've learned to the school of hard knocks is that grit is the one thing you absolutely need, because it's going to twist and tumble in ways you never saw. And that's grit I got. And I'm grateful, and got it from sports, got it from parents, got it, you know, DNA from grandparents. I mean, it's learned. And it's, a lot of it for me was learned in sports, and I have a whole chapter in Leadership and Life Hacks about that. And I think sports are incredibly important, particularly for girls and women. So that's a whole different conversation. But even in the book, I talk about this idea of putting your own oxygen mask on first, as the saying goes, on an airplane. And I really believe that there's no such thing as perfect balance. I believe in this idea of episodic balance versus daily balance, and you got to take care of yourself. And for me, that's athletics and working out. That's about sanity, not vanity. But I want to be motivated to do something I believe in. I want to be pulling together a team of people I enjoy working with and believe in as well, and I'm grateful to keep their company. And then I want to be sure that I'm taking care of them and taking care of myself along the way. And that's basically the recipe. And it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, it's what I've seen work so far.
You know, there is so much passion in what you share. And I know there had to be passion behind your decision to accept the challenge of being Surgical Solutions CEO. What made you do that? I would love to hear more about it.
Well, that was a step and a leap that I can honestly tell you was one of those rare moments in your life where you go down the path, you get the opportunity, you say yes, and then, as I said in the intro to the book, now what have I done? I mean, literally, that was the ultimate inspiration for the book, because I said to myself, I knew I wanted to run something private equity back, because I had done some good work with private equity firms after my venture back to company days, and I liked the egalitarianism and the speed and the size and scale of the companies I was working with, and wanted to run one of those. And then got them put in touch with some really great people at Sterling Partners in Chicago, who had a bunch of interesting consumer deals in coffee and sprinkles and other areas that were more consumer internet driven and more similar to what I had done in alcohol beverage and luxury goods. And so when I ultimately went down the path with them to talk about those opportunities, and the twist came that, oh, by the way, where they needed me the most was to be the CEO of a healthcare services company that was in distress, I said to myself, thanks, but no thanks. I really did. I said, you know, you've got some great board members. You've got one of whom I'd gone to high school with. She had been a swimmer I had watched compete, Kim Vander Moffitt, growing up, and she's a genuine friend. And I said, thanks, but no thanks. But then as I started to think about it more, I said to myself, you know, I teach this stuff. I teach this idea that leadership transcends industry. I know I'll put the work in to learn it. I don't need to be an expert on all things healthcare, that would take a lifetime. I just need to get really deep and narrow in my knowledge of this specific segment. And I do this. And the good news was, I didn't know what I didn't know. The better news was, is I surrounded myself on the board and in the team with extraordinary people who could completely rely on and run at their specific responsibilities hard and fast. Then I took the leap. But at the end of the day, it was a leap. And it was a leap that paid off. And it was a leap that proved right. And if you do bring together some domain experts in healthcare, obviously, and some, you know, good old-fashioned general-purpose athletes, you can run hard at something new. But it was a leap. And my passion is for learning, and my passion is for hard work, and my passion is for good old-fashioned leadership and management. And so those were the elements that inspired me to ultimately take the role. It's been quite the journey. I've learned more than I ever expected to, for sure.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to say thank you to our sponsors, and we'll be right back on Word of Mom Radio.
She is brave. She is strong. She is you. Because you're that woman who's got a product or a service that you're looking to promote, or you're out there seeking to support other women in business. Mompreneur marketers are here to help women learn, network, and build the businesses of their dreams. Because when you win, we win.
We all know a survivor. Some of our friends and family have made it through difficult times. Some of us don't make it. Losing a loved one to cancer, a car accident, or any other unfortunate event can be crippling and unavoidable. But one of the hardest subjects to talk about is suicide. Too often, our youth decide that leaving this place is easier than facing the struggle forced upon them every day. More than one in four children go through some form of bullying or another. Most of us survive with scars. But for some, the inner demons created cannot be recognized or treated in time to ensure they make it through. Bullying in every form is very much avoidable. It starts with me, and it starts with you. This is Kelly Carius from No Such Thing as a Bully, reminding you to do your part when you see bullying happen. If you don't know what that is, call 403-447-4444. 4404 or go to nosuchthingasabully.com.
Don't let the name fool you, because stadiumbags.com has a line of clear bags that enable you to use your phone and your smart devices without removing them from your bag. Not only that, but the product is so good it'll stand up to the cleaning solvents that you need to use now to make sure that when you come home safely. So take a look at stadiumbags.com. You'll see why we're your clear choice, because safety, it's in the bag.
And we're back here on Word of Mom Radio. We're talking with Alyssa Rapp, and now I want to share her book, Leadership and Life Hacks, Insights from a Mom, Wife, Entrepreneur, and Executive. I really enjoyed this book. I like the way it was written because I like things that you can just grab and read a piece of, that it isn't something that, you know, you have to read chapter by chapter, because I think very often, especially as moms and mompreneurs, we're all over the place. And so, again, the way that you put it together, it gives you that opportunity to grab what you need when you need it. So what is a hack?
I'm grateful and flattered you read it. And a hack is really, I got to the last page of the whole book I wrote, honestly. You'll love this. The last page wasn't the conclusion, or sometimes people write the introduction last. It was, what is a hack? Because I wrestled with whether or not I wanted to call anything about hacks. And I will say that as we had already submitted it to the publisher for printing that summer of 19, a bunch of hacks came out and about, and they came out and about in the world. And so I realized I was hopefully at the crest of a wave, not at the back half of hacks. But at the time, it felt pretty gutsy to put hack in a title. And my parents said, you know, isn't that like computers, bad people do with computers? And the answer is, in my mind, of course, though, there are hacks like computer hacking, where you're breaking into something and getting somewhere you shouldn't be. But the hack, as I try to think about it for purposes of leadership and life hacks, are workarounds or work through. It's Occam's razor, the 80-20 rule. If you can get something done with 80% of the information or 80% of the effort, not that I believe in cutting corners, because I absolutely do not. It's more just getting comfortable with imperfect information imperfect amounts of time, because there is never enough, and moving. And then what are the tricks of the trade to work around and work through and get more comfortable with the 80% of the information you have. And so I think that the question about, well, how did you decide to write a book about them, I think this is actually really important, because I heard this from my early days in politics, and I hear it in the back of my mind still today. I did it because someone asked me to. And Forbes Books came to me, and maybe they were looking for more authors who were women, maybe more women under 45, who knows. But they came to me and said, we've seen some of your articles on Forbes.com. Would you consider writing a book about them and come meet with us and spend a day and let's think about what the arc of the story would be? And so I did that part, and met a great editor in Bree Barton, whom I love, who's, you know, a business editor by day, but has her own, she's an extraordinary novelist in her own right by night, and three-part trilogy sold and all that. But I met with Bree, and I talked to the publisher, and I said, you know, what would the arc of the story be? And we spent two-thirds of the book thinking about how the narratives I had experienced would be captured in various themes, like pivot versus quit, or how to manage key stakeholders like a board of directors. And then the back third of the book ended up being more life hacks. How do you make sure you can still celebrate the good times? Come on. And how do you really think about my belief in episodic versus daily balance? And so that is, once I put it on paper, I started to believe in the arc of the story. And then the ideas came from my own life experience, needless to say. But what was also cool about the process that most people don't know is that how I wrote it was also in some ways a hack, because in the end I had that now great outline, and two of the articles I had written became two of the chapters of the book. And yet the others, I ended up sitting down over the course of 6 months, basically one chapter a month, and talked through into an app called Rev the stories, and then the editor and I shaped them into a more polished chapter and extracted the hacks themselves. And that whole process of sitting down, talking through the chapter, capturing it on Rev, having it transcribed with AI, seeing what came back and shaping it, that took about a month per chapter. So 6 months later, you had six new chapters, two had been written, two were evolved from the articles I'd written, and then you have an intro and conclusion, and there's a book. It was a modern way to, I guess, go about writing a book as well, not running into a cabin in Maine, as beautiful as Maine is, and doing it alone in the wilderness. It was really a much more, I guess, dynamic approach, which made it fun.
So what are your top leadership life hack?
Some of these have evolved during the pandemic, as you would imagine, which is why I ended up with the companion edition of Hacks for the New World, just 19 leadership and 19 life hacks for the COVID-19 era. But the one I've alluded to a couple times, I really think is particularly for a mompreneur audience, is the one to quadruple click on, which is this idea of episodic versus daily balance. And what do I mean by that? I mean that if I woke up every day trying to be the perfect wife, the perfect mother, the perfect CEO, the perfect lecturer, perfect board member, perfect best friend, perfect daughter, I would literally suffocate because there's no way I could ever get all that done in a day. But if I really try to think about doing two things particularly well that day, prioritizing two stakeholder groups, my work and my kids, or my husband and my kids on a weekend, or my husband and my work, not that my kids would ever be ignored, but because, you know, he'd been traveling pre-COVID for 2 weeks and it was time to have dinner one-on-one without kids clawing at us. That idea that if you try to get all stakeholders what they need over several days or even a week or, God forbid, even 2 weeks versus all jamming it into one day, it just feels more achievable and it allows for me to focus on what I'm trying to do excellently that day. And then never forgetting to put your own oxygen mask on first. Like, there are some things I have to do every day to be sane, and one of them is spending 45 to 60 minutes to myself on a workout or a this or a that, most likely on my Peloton tread or my Peloton bike or, you know, working out, et cetera. And that's just time for me to clear my brain, and I put that in the schedule, and that time is sacred. And that isn't because I don't want more time with my kids or more time with myself or more time for work. It's because if I don't put my own oxygen mask on first, I will be depleted, and instead it's my responsibility to make sure I have the stuff I need to go forth and conquer for the day. So that balance of episodic versus daily balance in terms of key stakeholders and yet doing something important for yourself every day, I think is probably the number one hack from the first main book. And there's so many that, you know, 99 others there and 19 plus 19, 38 others from the second book. But on a much more simplified note and less philosophical note, you know, for the pandemic hacks, there were many that have been really fun, and I hope we'll continue after post-pandemic. But, you know, cooking together, we've done a lot more cooking together. I've done a lot more virtual catch-ups over Zoom or Google Hangouts with old friends, like actually spending an hour looking at each other and having a conversation than I had done pre-pandemic. We've done some more local field trips and done DIY science and art experiments. Last night my kids wanted to make edible slime, and I said, oh, God, we've done so much slime. We had a little break, and now edible slime. It seems a little more than I can handle right now. But at the same time, it's fun. Like, those are the things, if you were the whole world were open, that maybe we wouldn't be as innovative about. So those are a few.
In reading your book and all of the different things that you share, you know success, you know what failure is, and everything in between. What drives you to continue to take on these challenges, Alyssa?
That's a great question, Dori. I mean, the drive comes from within. I had this conversation the other day with a very close family friend, my husband's best friend from University of Michigan, in fact, and we talked about it, and it is the desire for impact, change management, and supporting others. And, you know, when you're running a healthcare company, there are the 250 people for whom I'm responsible as employees. There are the thousands of patients and clinicians whose stakeholders that we impact on a day-to-day basis. There's impact. Like, having this company make it grow, thrive, expand its capabilities means you're impacting more people's lives. So there's that. And then there's also, I think that what drives me to do the next one or the next one after that, as we talked about in the very beginning, you know, somewhat cyclically, problem solving and seeing how the world and markets within that world change and seeing if there are unique problems and solutions that you can put forth and then running hard at it. And that, the love of the game, right? The love of the challenge. We talked before the call and the show, I should say, about, you know, work ethic and drive as athletes. Well, you know, I think that I'm someone, and my husband's the exact same way, and he was a professional athlete, for goodness sakes, who really loved to work. We're workers. I love to practice. I love the journey as much as I love the competition, and maybe even more the journey. So, you know, desire to work hard and provide positive impact into the world and industry and in people's lives is probably the number one thing that I would say drives me.
It's amazing how fast this all goes, because I want to continue to talk to you. I really do.
No,
we should do
kind.
A two-part interview. There are so many of the hacks that I want to delve into. And believe it or not, the one that you kept coming back to, the episodic, just makes so much sense when you read it, because you don't even think of it that way. But as I said, I mean, we're going to have to bring you back.
Thank you for suggesting it.
I'm serious. I actually want to read your follow-up book.
I will,
you know,
happily send you a copy, and then we can do round two. How about that?
You
and maybe by
what?
Then the world will be vaccinated. We have something else to celebrate, for goodness sakes.
you know, let's face it. I think, you know, every time somebody says the new normal, I'm like, no, because life will go back. But I think the change that has come out of this, as somebody, I've worked from home since 1994. So last century, I've been a mom
not
for
less.
Less
century.
And
not last century.
Well, it was last century, though. But when you think
literally,
validated,
yes, yes.
When you think of it, all of this has validated the women who have built their businesses from home and men who have worked from home because people don't realize the discipline it takes. People don't realize all of life's distractions that happen as you are raising a family and building a business and all of the other things. And now we face the challenges of having our significant other with us and our kids and everything else. So, you know, while our office might have been the kitchen table, now we're sharing it. And so
that ain't easy, let me tell you.
It's exactly right. It's not easy. It's funny, in the beginning when all of this was happening, we kept sharing tips and tricks on how to make it work working from home. And one of the things I said was get a different color light bulb. And when you absolutely are working on something that you cannot be interrupted, put that light bulb on. And everybody laughed that their kids got it. It was the significant, their husband or whatever. Those were the ones that had the hardest time with even the light bulb. You know, the kids fall right into line, you know, but it's just,
that's hilarious.
So as we wrap up, let everyone know how to get in touch with you, Alyssa. And then again, we'll have you back.
Would love to come back. To get in touch with me, Alyssa, A-L-Y-S-S-A, RAPP, R-A-P-P, .com is where you can sign up for the Hacks Weekly newsletter or follow on social, Twitter, @ Alyssa RAPP, A-L-Y-S-S-A-R-A-P-P, at Instagram, @ Alyssa J. RAPP, and Facebook, Alyssa RAPP, LinkedIn. Look me up. I'll be there, and thank you for having me.
It has absolutely been my pleasure. We'll have links to this book. You will really enjoy this book. One of my favorite hacks was one of the last hacks in your little mini hack, and I'm just going to leave you guys with it. Don't let perfectionism be the death of progress. You know, we have quite a few recovering perfectionists that listen to our show, and we always say to them, you know, done is better than perfect.
No question. Done is better than perfect. Amen to that.
It really is. It really is. But I'm serious. You will love this book. You'll get some laughs. It'll make you think. And that's what a book is all about. It's making you think. So, Alyssa, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. To all of you tuning in to Word of Mom, we so appreciate you sharing your time with us. We're going to close out with our fabulous theme song from Smith Sisters Bluegrass. So till next time, this is Dori DiCarlo saying go out and create a marvelous you. Bye for now.
She is sure.
She is sure.
She is strong.
She is strong.
She is